So let's talk a little bit about ASLR. We've been avoiding it so far, and the truth is there's a lot of ways to get around it potentially, from memory leaks to brute forcing to just little static values at locations, even though ASLR is on. There's a large number of ways in which you can defeat ASLR depending on the vulnerability and the target OS and exploit mitigations and so on and so forth. So with ASLR on Linux, when you turn it on, the stack and the heap and the libraries are randomized. So shared objects and things like that, they're going to change where they're loaded at every time you run a process, which is different on Windows. Windows randomizes the DLLs once per boot. Linux, they get randomized every process invocation. Some important things to note, the most significant bits are not randomized. So that's important because of segmentation. It makes sense that we wouldn't be randomizing the most significant bits, again, because of that segmentation. We've got to make sure that the stack and the heap and the code segment don't collide with each other. Also, the final nibble or the final byte, we may want them for alignment purposes to be divisible by 4, divisible by 8 or something. We'll see here shortly what the entropy is for these different sections in memory. If you use something like the PAX patch, GR security, it's going to greatly increase the entropy that's used. If you use 64-bit architecture and it's a 64-bit process, it's going to have more bits available to use for randomization. So remember, even if you're on 64-bit process versus 32-bit process, you're only going to use what you need. I guess my comparison would be, put yourself into like a movie theater. So you're in a movie theater, and let's say there's a 300 or 400 seats that you can choose from. Now pretend that that's a 32-bit process. If you had to guess where I was going to be sitting, and every time you leave the room, I move to a new seat, you've got a 1 in 300 chance, right? That's low entropy. Versus, now imagine that you're in a stadium watching some type of a game, and there's 60,000 seats. So now the entropy is much greater. You have a much less chance of guessing where I'm located, what seat I'll be in. So that's kind of how it works with 32 versus 64-bit. There's a lot more bits available in the entropy pool. Now, the process isn't taking up any more space than it did on 32-bit. It's just got that virtual memory space available that's also, again, specific to the process because that's that translation process that occurs to physical memory. Just kind of pointing that out a bit. So how do you defeat ASLR? How much entropy is there? I might be able to brute force. So how many tries do I get? Can I spray memory with a bunch of benign opcodes like not bytes? And will that help me? Is there data leakage? Is there some kind of an information disclosure bug where I can leak out what the internal memory layout looks like? Are there static values that are being used somewhere? So maybe not everything is randomized. And if you can find something that's not randomized within the process space and it's executable, you can get around ASLR that way. And that's going to end up being this first technique we look at. So we're going to combine in this example ASLR and stack canaries at the same time. For this one, I'm using the image Edgy, so Kubuntu Edgy. And the reason I'm going to use that one is because everything, it uses Linux kernel version 2.6.17. And 2.6.17 through 2.6.19 had a certain static value in memory that allowed you to get around ASLR in some cases. Now, I wouldn't be showing you this technique if it were something that's only usable with those kernel versions. Now this particular static location was specific to those kernel versions, but the technique applies anywhere, and I'll explain more about that as we go through it. So the program we're going to look at is ASLR Canary. And if we run it, it looks real familiar, right? We put a bunch of A's in, some B's in, some C's in, and stack smashing detected. So it's the same program as before, but now ASLR has been turned on. So we can't write a static address on the stack as to where our shellcode would be. We've got to find a different technique. So how much entropy is there, and how do we know ASLR is even on? There's this little program here called ESP, and here's the source code. All it's doing is running some inline assembly, and it's moving the stack pointer address into the accumulator register and returning that and printing it out onto the screen. So it's going to show us where the stack pointer is pointing each time we run it. So if you run the program, see how every time you run it, it's different. ASLR is on. We can easily go and turn ASLR off if we're root. So if I say sudo minus I, and we enter in our password, which I got wrong. Let me try that again. All right. And we say echo 0 into proxys kernel randomized VA space, drop back out, and now watch what happens. See how the stack is static now. And then we go back in and turn it back on. Drop out, and now ASLR is on again. That's how easy you turn ASLR on and off. So look at the entropy though. The first byte is static, and the last nibble is static, leaving 2 to the 20th power of entropy. So Python minus C print 2 to the 20th power. We get just over a million possible locations as to where it could be. That ends up not really being good entropy, but it's something. It's a million. But if we want to brute force that, we can probably brute force it within a minute or two. And that'll be one of your extended hours challenges you'll have. So point being that the stack is randomized. Also the libraries. I'll use the list or list dynamic dependencies, LDD, and we'll run that against the program. Run it 3 times. Now notice that the Linux gate, which is used for fast system calls, is static every time. But look at libc.s0.6. It is randomized. How much randomization? Not a whole lot, just 12 bits. I don't have to do math for that one. I can do it in my head. It's 4,096 bytes or bits. That's not great, right? That's not great entropy. 1 in 4,096 is not good entropy. So brute forcing the library and doing like return to libc might be more viable brute force option. Either way, our goal is not brute force right now, but you can see the libraries are randomized. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to grab the answer just so I don't have to repair the canary again, but we're going to go through the defeating ASLR piece. All right, so we're going to go into the debugger. And we're going to paste this in. All right, I'm getting rid of the answer portion. And I'm put RRRR for the return pointer. And notice that the canary repair stuff looks just like what I demoed previously. And we run it, and it says segmentation fault, 52525252. If I mess with that canary and change it to like 0B in the front, you can see that stack smashing detected. So I just wanted to demonstrate that we are in fact still repairing the canary. We're now combining two exploit mitigations together. So we still have control, and we did the canary repair. What we want to do now is look at bypassing or defeating ASLR. Well, what's interesting about this is the process just crashed because 52525252 is not valid mapped memory. So let's look at what the stack pointer is pointing to at this moment in time. So x/8x ESP. And you look on the screen, it's pointing to our NOP sled, right? There's our 8 NOP bytes, and then it's shellcode. And currently it's a BF87C6F0. If I run this again, and we look at what the stack pointer is pointing to, it was pointing to BF87C6F0. Now it's pointing to BFA580D0. So ASLR is running, but notice that it's still pointing to the NOP sled. And if we run it again, it's pointing to the NOP sled. If we run it again, it's pointing to the NOP sled. So no matter where we are in memory, relative to that location, the layout's still the same, right? Because of the way the stack operates. This is by no mere chance. This is just the way it works. So let me draw that just to explain further. So let's say we've got the stack here. Let me change that to black. So this is our buffer. And then we've got our save frame pointer afterward. And then we've got the return pointer. I'll throw the canary in there too, just because it's there. Then return pointer. And after that, we've got our NOP bytes, right? 90909090. We've got 4 more of them. And then we've got our shell code. Now think about the procedure epilogue. If the stack pointer points up to the top of the stack, top of the buffer, the base pointer points to the save frame pointer, right? The first line of code in the epilogue is move, I'll just stick with the AT&T for the moment, EBP into ESP. What that's going to do is move the stack pointer down to here. And now the stack pointer and the base pointer are pointed to the same spot. And then the next instruction is pop EBP, which means it's going to pop the save frame pointer into the base pointer. And now the stack pointer is going to point to the return pointer, right? That's how that works. And then we hit ret. Well, when we return to whatever the return pointer is pointing to. Then the stack pointer points to now the nops. So ASLR doesn't matter, right? Because relatively, the procedure epilogue is always going to result in the same thing. And we point to our nop sled. So what we want to do, and I know some of you are already thinking this, overwrite the return pointer with an address that's static, even with ASLR on, that points to a jump ESP. That's going to say the return pointer, when you execute the ret instruction, ret to the address of a jump ESP. At that moment in time, the stack pointer would point to the nop sled. You're going to jump to wherever the stack pointer is pointing and start executing the nop sled and the shell code as code. So that's getting us around ASLR. We're trying to find a static location in memory that isn't being randomized so that we can bypass ASLR completely. Is that always going to be possible? No. But like oftentimes on Windows, the reason that Windows was a process was exploitable is because the process comes with third-party DLLs that aren't compiled with the dynamic base flag, and therefore don't participate in ASLR. One weak link in the whole chain and the thing breaks. So what we're going to do is go back over to our debugger here, and we want to identify something static. And you may recall from earlier, if we drop down to a shell and we do a LDD on this program, that Linux gate is not randomized. It's always at the penultimate or second to last page of memory. So it's also executable. It's used for the fast system calls. If we can find something at that static page of memory that's useful, like a jump ESP or a call ESP, then we should be able to bypass ASLR in this case. So let's go and take a look at it inside the debugger. So since we know where it is, we can just say examine 8 bytes, so x/8 bytes, one bit at a time, that address, E000. And it dumps out into the screen those bytes. We're looking for jump ESP, which is the opcode FFE4 or FFD4. Those are the jump and call ESP opcode bytes. So FFE4 or FFD4. You can see FFE4 on the screen, but it's in the wrong order. We need it in the other order. So we keep going down, and you could do it manually. And in fact, I'm holding enter, so it's flying down the screen right now. And when we get all the way down to here, 777, you see FF followed by E4. So obviously I can't scan the screen that fast. I know that it's there because it was at on those kernel versions on Linux that I mentioned before. FFFFE777 held the opcodes we need to bypass ASLR. Now, going back to what I said initially, does that mean it only works on these specific versions of Linux? No. Anything in memory that's statically located, that's been mmapped to a static location, like a shared object, or maybe if it's not a position-independent executable, somewhere in the code segment of the program or the PLT, all you have to do is find those 2 bytes. Side by side. And if you find them, you can bypass ASLR using this technique. So all we have to do now is change the RRRR to be that address. So 77, E7, FF, FF, and we run it and we get shellcode execution. Because we overwrote the return pointer with the static address of the opcodes that do a jump ESP. And I showed you how the position independent and relative nature of this works. So it's a pretty cool little trick. So let's drop out of here. And like I said before, you will see this in the capture the flag challenge, at least on one single challenge. So it's, you know, a good one to try out. And this, of course, just walks you through that technique here, everything we just covered, because it's a walkthrough. And there's other opcodes of interest as well. It doesn't have to be a jump or call ESP. There's actually a Windows capture the flag challenge in the course, and that the EDI register happens to point to a string you control or a buffer you control. So it would be a call or jump EDI instead of ESP. So it doesn't have to be that register. You return to anything that helps yield control is what you're looking to do. So now let's take a look at a 64-bit Stack Overflow example. So first off, we want to do a quick introduction to 64-bit Stack Overflows in general, and then we'll get to an exercise very shortly. So remember, with 64-bit, there are 16 general-purpose registers as opposed to the 32-bit world where we've got 8 general-purpose registers. So that's going to allow the entropy and the number of bits used in the randomization pool to greatly increase. We still don't use all 64 bits or anything. One, because we need to maintain segmentation still. And two, because we just don't need that many bits of entropy. There's no need for brute forcing. A proper 64-bit implementation should be quite exhaustive and time consuming. So if you take a look, that same program that we talked about previously, the ESP program that I wrote, which was simply that little inline assembly that moves the stack pointer into the accumulator register and prints it out to the screen. We're doing the same thing, but on 64-bit version now. And you can see that instead of 20 bits of entropy by default, it's 32 bits of entropy. So we've gone from around a million to now 4.29 billion bits. So greatly increased the entropy there. We are going to, in this section, we're going to use the PETA plugin, which is Python Exploit Development Assistance for the GNU debugger. And that was written by Long Lee, who used to be at VN Security. It greatly modifies the interface that you'll see shortly with GDB, and it changes the color to make things more obvious and clear on the screen, like your eyes will be drawn to it more. It will automatically dump out certain registers and disassembly that it assumes you want to see. It's got a bunch of different exploitation commands, similar to Mona, if you've used that before, and we'll use that in Book 5, of course, with Immunity Debugger. So a lot of cool exploit-oriented commands that we'll take advantage of as well. So here's a screenshot of what it looks like. So at the top there, we just set a breakpoint on main, and then we run the program. It instantly breaks on main, and look what it automatically dumps out. This is one half of it. You can see it dumps out the processor registers and uses some color coding to make it easier to look at. And then it continues to dump the disassembly around the breakpoint, as well as the stack information. So you get automatically a bunch of stuff that it assumes that you might want to see. But it also, again, it's dumping a lot of stuff out on the screen, so it can be a little bit distracting as well as useful. So if you say help PETA, as seen on this slide, it shows you some of the commands that you can run. And some of that stuff looks great, right? Checksec, so you saw us run that a little bit earlier, where we looked at what exploit mitigations are used by that particular binary. You can do assembly search, so you can look for instructions in memory. You can check the ASLR settings. You can do all kinds of really neat stuff. One example there on the bottom is the xrefs command. That's looking at cross-references. In this case, I'm saying, show me any cross-reference to the function overflow. And it gives us one example. It says, there's only one call to the overflow function, and that's at that memory location identified, which is very useful. Another example, remember the Metasploit pattern create and pattern offset tools that we used? Well, they've been ported into PETA and into GDB. So we can just run it straight from inside GDB and get that pattern created, and we can also do the offset. Another example is jump call, and that's going to show us any jumps or calls to registers. And we talked about how that might be useful with jump-oriented programming previously. So really neat commands built in. And we'll look at some more as we go through the exercise here coming up. Now, on some versions, on some more modern versions of the GNU debugger, remember before when we got a segmentation fault, it actually went to the address and we saw that address show up in the instruction pointer. That's not a valid address. So it actually lets the process crash. On some of the different versions of GDB, like we'll see here, it's not actually going to allow that command to execute. It's going to stop on the command before it and basically say, if we would have continued, you would have crashed. You'll see things displayed a little bit differently, but nothing that we can't manage. So our goals for this one, we've got a Linux ELF binary that I put onto your Kali Linux VM. It's a POC program vulnerable to a Stack Overflow. ASLR is enabled. And our goal is to trigger that buffer overflow. Again, determine the buffer size, compensate for ASLR, verify control of the instruction pointer, and gain that code execution. So if you want, as always, you can stop here and pause and try to do it yourself or go through the walkthrough on your own, but then here will be the where the walkthrough begins. So the first thing you're going to do, I'm going to switch to my Kali Linux VM, is you're going to run the x64 vuln program. And when you run it, it says enter a string of characters to get a length, so I'll put in 8. And it comes back and says the length of your input is 8. If we use the file command on the binary, it tells us it's a 64-bit ELF binary, and it's not stripped. You can always strip it if you want a bit more of a challenge as well. So we'll go ahead and clear the screen there. Next up, we're going to run a Python command. So Python minus C, print A times 60. We'll pipe that into x64 vuln, and it says the length of your input is 60, which is correct. And we'll just change this to 600. And we get a crash, a seg fault. So very similar to how we went about doing this previously. But now let's bring up GDB. So we'll say GDB, x64 vuln. And we're going to go run and put our Python command in here. So Python minus C print A times 600. And let this run. And when we do that, a bunch of stuff gets dumped out. That's PETA doing that. If we scroll back up to the top where the code, where the registers are, you can see that the base pointer holds 4141, basically 8 41s. And it's a little bit longer to say with 64-bit versus 32-bit. And that's really the only thing we see here just by glancing. We also see at the stack pointer, 7FFF, so on and so forth, it tells you A repeats 196 times there, starting at wherever the stack pointer is pointing. So it didn't actually ret to what the stack pointer was pointing to, like you would expect. We would have seen 41414, a bunch of those. It didn't execute it. It stops just short of there. It says we're on the ret instruction. Had we have continued, you would have gotten those A's in the instruction pointer. So it's a little bit different, but we'll, again, manage here shortly. It's no big deal. One thing you may notice or not notice, depending on how you're paying attention in this debugger, is on newer versions of GDB, it sets the randomization to off. Only in the debugger, though. So outside the debugger, randomization is on. Inside the debugger, randomization is off. Now, we will change that shortly because I want to see what it looks like outside the debugger. So you can turn it on or off in the debugger accordingly with the disable randomization command. But we'll get back to that. Next up, let's create a pattern. So we just say pattern create 300 bytes. And it produces that pattern right away for us. So I'm going to grab the pattern without the quotation mark or the apostrophe. And we're just going to type in run, just like before, Python minus C print. And then we'll paste in the pattern. And then we'll close that up. Now we run this, seg fault, we crashed again. But this time, we're going to look at what the stack pointer is pointing to. So we'll say x/gx, g stands for giant, so it's a quad word basically, and dump it out in hexadecimal, $RSP. And there you can see what is printed out. That's a piece of the pattern there. So what we're going to do with that is just as a string, so we'll say x, so examine as a string, RSP, and we see the ASCII version of that. We want to grab the first 8 bytes. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's the pattern we care about because that's where we would have returned to had the ret instruction executed, but it stopped just short, right? So we copy that. Then we say pattern offset, paste in that piece of the pattern, and it says found at 104. So 104 is the offset where that piece of the pattern has been found. So really similar to before, just that we had to actually dump out the stack pointer because it didn't ret for us. That was the only difference there. So let's verify that we're correct here. I'm going to clear the screen and we'll say run Python minus C, print, and this time A times 104 to get us to the return pointer position, plus I'm going to put dead code in twice. So DE, C0, DE, and then repeat that again. And we'll close that out. And we'll put in a little knob sled just so we can see everything clear in memory. So hex 90 times 8 and finish that up. So we go, we've crashed as we expected, x/2gx, to dump out two quad words in hexadecimal, starting from the stack pointer. And look what we got. Dead code, followed by our nops. So we're just validating. And had the ret instruction executed, we would have jumped to dead code. So we're getting much closer to finishing this off. Next thing I want to do is turn off randomization. So set disable randomization to off. And that way randomization will be on inside the debugger. Just to verify, I'm going to say, let's run this again. And let's look at the stack pointer. So info reg RSP. There you can see what it was the first run. We'll run it again. And this time it's a different value. So we're just verifying that randomization is actually on now inside the debugger. And it is. At this point, we're going to say disassemble the main function. And you can see there's only one call, and it's to a function called overflow, very properly named for us. So we'll say disassemble overflow, and we dump that out onto the screen. Now, if you're looking for the vulnerable function, it's right here. This read function does not do any bounds checking. And we can look at the buffer size and all that fun stuff if you want to and see that we're quickly going to get into trouble here because it's going to read in more data than we've allocated buffer space for. So that's the culprit right there. The next thing we want to do is set a breakpoint on the ret instruction down here. So we're going to set a breakpoint since you see the addressing is 000, all those zeros in the front. We're going to set a breakpoint on the symbol name main plus the offset, which is 83. So to do that, we'll say break asterisk, actually not main, overflow function, overflow plus 83 is the offset. And that sets the breakpoint for us. So we say run, and we hit the breakpoint. Well, it's kind of behaving weird here, and it instantly hit me as the why. If you don't run with, if you have the debugger open and you did some things, a lot of times GDB is going to repeat what you last did. So you need to clear out the arguments. So I'm going to say set args and just hit enter. That clears them out. And now we run the process, and this time we hit the breakpoint. Or no, we didn't hit the breakpoint yet. We hit the, it wants us to enter in data. So I'm just going to hand in four A's and hit enter. And now we hit the breakpoint. So if we look at the instruction pointer, you can see, oh, right now to the XOR here for some reason. So examine, oh, RSP, that's why. RIP is what I meant to put. And we're on the ret instruction where we expected to be. So we're at a good point where we want to use the command in P to call jump call to RSP. We want to look for an opcode or a memory address that stores the opcode for a jump or call RSP. So we say jump call. The register is RSP that we're interested in. Why? Because RSP is what is going to be pointing to the code we want to have executed, right? And we need, the reason it's stopping short is because the addresses we've used so far, like dead code and four ones, they're not valid addresses. If we use a real address that's executable, the debugger won't stop then and it will let us continue execution. So we get four hits here and we're going to use the top one, which is the 40061E. So to do that, we're going to have to put all the zeros in the front. So it's going to be actually 00000000004006 1E. So we got to put that on the beginning. The nice thing about the read function is it lets us write those null bytes. So again, a lot of it depends on the function that's involved in the vulnerability as to whether or not you're going to be able to do it. So let's type this out, run, and then we'll put in here Python minus C, print, A times 104 gets us to the return pointer, plus we got to put that long address in. So put it in little endian format, 1E0640, and now we got to put five sets of zeros in. So 00000000, and that should be right. Plus, I'm going to put in hex CC, which is an interrupt 3 opcode that will basically, it's a software breakpoint. That's what I meant to say, not interrupt 3. It is an int 3, but it's a software breakpoint is what we care about, and it's going to pause execution if we hit it. So put 8 of those in and then close that out. So we run it. Now we hit the breakpoint. Let's verify. Examine instruction at RIP. We're at the ret. Let's see what the stack pointer is pointing to. So x/gx, $RSP. And you can see we're about to return to the address of where that call RSP or jump RSP was. So now let's say step instruction. And it let us continue. We're in this function called ASM or whatever, and you can see we're at the right point. So if we look at the instruction pointer, x/i, $RIP, we're at the jump RSP. Well, what's RSP point to? x/gx RSP. It's got our CCs in there. So if we step one instruction, we should have now hit the spot on the stack where the int3s are located. So x/i, RIP, you can see we're at int3, and that's why it paused. So had we put shellcode here instead of the int3, we should be good to go. So let's verify. We're going to go ahead and I'm going to open up a new shell, and we're going to create with MSF Venom a payload. So MSF Venom minus P Linux x64. Shell bind TCP, L port, let's open up 9999, and then minus format we'll do for C here. So we'll give that a moment, and once it produces the shell code, we've got that on the screen now. We're going to have to piece this together, which will take a moment to get it done, but let's jump back over here. I'm going to take my input, so I don't have to retype that. And we're going to quit the debugger. So quit. And let's paste that back in. And instead of the CC times 8, we're going to put that shell code in. Put a little NOPSLED afterwards first. So let's do a hex 90 times 4, just to give it a little padding in there. Probably don't need it. Plus, then we're going to put in our shell code. So I'm going to have to go back and forth a few times, so give me a moment, bear with me. Let's grab the first block here and paste that in. Grab the second block. We've got 6 total that we have to do this on. Paste that in. 3 of 6, let's get that. Oh, it's looking kind of weird on the screen. Now I'm getting worried. The formatting is getting wonky. So let's just keep going and see what happens. Should be able to still piece it together. And let's get the final 2 lines. Be smarter to do this in an editor, but that's okay. And we'll close it out. All right, so we paste that in. And I'm just going to grab this whole piece in case it gets screwed up in a moment. Okay. Yeah, it looks ugly, so let's clear the screen. Let's paste the whole thing in. Now we've got it all in one chunk. Now what I'm going to do is redirect that into a file called input, and then we should be good there. Now we run x64, and we send in the input file, and we hope it works. And it's hanging, which is a good sign, so let's go see if port 9999 is open. And it is open. It's listening. And if we go, of course, and kill this, it should no longer be open. And it's not anymore. So that is an example of a 64-bit stack overflow, and we used Kali Linux as our target just because it's convenient, because we already have that one on the course USB. So let's jump back out now and continue onward. All right, so we're jumping to slide number 196, and we're going to look at yet another way to deal with ASLR here. So in this example, this one's going to be a possibility if you have local access to the system, or if you're remotely accessing the system, but you know, you've got a local console on the box. The technique leverages the odd behavior as to how the exec long function works. And that's what we're going to cover here shortly. This one should work on many different Linux distributions out there. And let's just take a look. So I'm going to go to Kubuntu Gutsy on this one. It's running kernel 2.6.22, so your typical IoT device. And we're going to make sure ASLR is on. So let's do that before I forget, because it's not very impressive if ASLR is it's not running. So if we do the ESP command, you can see ASLR is not on. So sudo minus I. And let's turn it on. And there you can see ASLR is on. Let's go back out to the slide. So you can go through and use LDD. We know ASLR is on, but you can verify that that's still happening, that things are being randomized from the library perspective as well. The Linux gate on this version of Kali still shows as static, but they scrub that location. The FFFFE777 location doesn't have that useful opcode anymore, so that's not going to be an option. Now, there might be other static things in memory that you can use, but you just can't use that Linux gate technique in this one. So this is just showing you the kernel version, and if you run LDD, you can see the library is randomized, libc.so.6, so that's all valid. And then this program that we're going to go after is ASLR Vuln. And if you give it a long string of A's as an argument, as you can see, it segfaults. And we'll just validate this real quick. And there it crashes. So it's what we expect. Do 48 of them, and it crashes. So it's what we expect to see. Now, if we go inside the debugger, and now we say run backtick python minus c print A times 48, and close that out. Now, if you're wondering why am I not doing that less than parenthesis thing here, because this particular vulnerability is within an argument that's being passed in. If you remember the other programs, they want you to start them and then you get prompted to enter an input. So it's a little bit different, right? This is taking in an argument. So if we run that, you can see we segfault and it gives us this weird address. So we run it again. This time we get 41414141. Kind of interesting. Run it again. We get it again. This time it didn't do anything. A's, a weird value, 3F, 414. So see how it's inconsistent is my point. Null, 41. So every few tries, we get control with the A's, but not always. If you've ever looked like in a Metasploit module and it says the reliability index is low, for example, this would be an example of a vulnerability that might just be inconsistent, meaning that you could potentially crash the process instead of getting code execution. So it's just something to consider. Or there might be a way to tune the exploit to make it more reliable once you get to that point. Let's jump out for a moment. And you can see same thing as before. Sometimes we get control, sometimes we don't. The thing is, though, ASLR is on. So what are we going to overwrite the return pointer with is the question. Brute forcing is not a great solution. So how could we potentially defeat this? In this example, we're going to create a little wrapper program in C. And we're going to see if we can still maintain control this way. And in that wrapper program, we're going to use the exec long function, which does something really interesting. It replaces the current process image of the wrapper program with the image of what we're going to open with exec long. So we're basically using the same PID and the same memory space. And in fact, it doesn't re-randomize because it's the same memory space that's being used. And there's going to be a real cool trick we do with this wrapper program to get insight into the memory layout of the vulnerable program that we open with exec long. So here's the code. If we just jump over here, I'll quit. And we're going to cat out ASLR 1.c. And in this one, looks like I was messing around with it. You see the buffer is 1,000 bytes. Or that's actually the final exploit. So let's go and look at my ASLR files. So ASLR Vuln is the program. ASLR test. Let's take a look at that one. So cat ASLR test 1.c. So that's what we were just looking at on the screen. What this is going to do is in the main function, we're creating a buffer for 48 bytes. And we've got two uninitialized variables, junk and I. And this printf says I, the variable I, is at %p, which prints out a memory address. And the argument we're passing to that format string is ampersand I. That is, print out the address of I, and that's what's going to get listed on the screen. Then we're using memset to set the buffer to A's, so hex 4 ones, all the way through. And then we're going to use execlong to open up the vulnerable program and feed it in the buffer. So that's all we're doing is creating this little wrapper program that's going to create this uninitialized variable, get the address of it printed onto the screen, and then feed in the buffer of 48 A's. So let's try running this inside the debugger and run. So we run it the first time, we get that as a result. Second time, we get that. Third time, still haven't gotten control. We got a null. And then the fourth or fifth time, we got the A's. So let's do it again. We got nothing. We got the A's again. So same result. Every few tries, we get control, but not every time. That's just showing us that our wrapper program is working. What's neat, though, is look what I is. I is at BF90C82C. In the next run, I is at BF8EC80C. So the address of the I variable is changing because of ASLR. But this is our wrapper program is printing that out first. And then execlong is being used to replace the process image. And that I, that memory address is still going to be relevant because that's where the stack will have been mapped. So with our wrapper program, we've got inside knowledge of the vulnerable process memory layout. So let's jump back out to the slides. And it's just showing you in the screenshots that we got the same result. What we want to do, we don't know really how big the buffer is until it gets to the return pointer. We didn't bother to figure that out. And in fact, in this case, we don't even really need to care. Whatever we want to use as our return pointer, we could just write it over and over again, and it should fall into the right position, right, at some point. Instead of putting A times whatever, we just put our return pointer guess over and over again. It may not always work, maybe some alignment issues, but in this case, it will work. Then we'll put a NOP sled after the buffer, which is where we want to land. Then we'll put our shell code. The problem, though, is we need to figure out where to return. Well, that's where that I, uninitialized variable, is going to come into play here. So because we don't know where the stack will be mapped, we create that variable that's going to be relevant to the stack in the wrapper program, and then we get the address of that variable, and we use that to use as a return pointer address overwrite, because we're hoping our NOPs will end up there. So let's see the code. So the code here is, there's our shell code. It's just going to spawn a shell if it's successful. And then we've got a character buffer of 200 bytes in this case. That may change depending on what you're doing. We've got the two uninitialized variables, I and ret. And then we're initializing ret. Ret equals, as an integer, the address of I. And then this offset we can modify. Maybe we find that the NOP sled ends up 20 bytes away or 100 bytes away. And we can use that offset here accordingly. But what we're doing is setting the return pointer to be the address of I, because we know that the vulnerable process is going to use that same address layout as the wrapper. Then we got some printf statements that aren't really important. We've got a little for loop here. We're going to write the return pointer all the way until we get out to offset 64. So we're writing the return pointer 16 times, which is the address of I plus 8. Then we're writing 64 NOP bytes with a memset. Then we're doing memcopy to copy the shellcode into the buffer at offset 128. And then we're using execlong to open up their vulnerable program, and we're feeding it in that buffer. And this is the one that's called ASLR 1, I believe. Let's double check. So we'll quit. So ASLR vuln, ASLR test is what we just saw, ASLR 1. So let's cap that out again. And there it is. The only difference in this one is I created a character buffer of 1,000 bytes, but it shouldn't really matter in this case. So this is ASLR 1. Let's try it out. Do you think it's going to work on the first try? Now, we know that even if it does work, it could be inconsistent, but let's try it. First try, we got a seg fault. Second try, seg fault. Third try. Third try, we got it. So you can see the technique clearly works. We're running again. Once, twice, three times, four times, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12. What's taking a while this time? There we go. We got it, though, after about 12 or 13 tries. One, two, three, four, five, six. So six tries. So it's pretty much the same consistency as before. But really cool technique, again, because we've got inside knowledge of the process, the vulnerable process that we're opening with exec long for reusing the same image without re-randomizing. So a nice little technique. So let's jump back out to the slide here. Feel free to try that one out if you want. So in summary, that's a pretty big module. We covered stack canaries and then multiple ways of getting around ASLR and also a 64-bit Stack Overflow example as well. All right, so we're now at the point in the book where we get to the boot camp. So what I'm going to do here is introduce thoroughly each exercise, and then you're on your own to complete them. And this really is the point in the course day where you want to challenge yourself and you want to work through and try to make sure you get your way through to completion. So I'm going to do a strong introduction here. And again, I recommend that you take this introduction and then work through it on your own and see if you can make it prior to going through the walkthroughs. So the first one here is brute forcing ASLR. And we didn't cover brute forcing until this point earlier. The ways we got around ASLR were different. But at the end of the day, this might be the only choice that you have. And oddly enough, you can get through brute forcing a pretty large entropy pool rather quickly. That's going to be the first one. The second one we'll get to in a moment is MBSC, and I'll explain that one, and then there's a bonus exercise. So with the first one, with brute forcing ASLR, you're going to use your Kubuntu Pangolin VM, so your 12.04 precise Pangolin VM. You're going to look at the entropy, which is again going to be 2 to the 20th power. The program you want to use is ASLR underscore brute. That's your target. You're first going to want to find the vulnerability in the target program, and then you're going to enable ASLR, brute force it, and see how many tries it takes. So when you run the program, it says, tell me your name. You give it a name, it prints it out, so nothing exciting. You enter in 1,000 A's in this example, and it seg faults. You're going to go in and determine the buffer size, which you can see here is 608 bytes. Again, if you want to stop the recording here and just go and try it, please, by all means, do that. But you'll determine the buffer size and the vulnerable function. This, you're just verifying that you have instruction pointer control without ASLR on yet. And once you verify that, you're good to go to continue. So you've got control of the instruction pointer. Then you're going to turn on ASLR and move towards building a working exploit. So first, I guess prior to turning on ASLR, you're just going to verify that you can get code execution. And in this example, we're saying run Python minus C, print 612 A's, and then we don't have a return pointer address yet, so we do BBBB. And then we put in our shell code. And when we run that, we see that we do get control of the instruction pointer with 42424242. We examine memory, and we find a good landing pad as to where our shell code resides. Now again, this memory layout might change a little bit for you. The instructions will tell you to maybe add a little NOPS let or change things around, but it should be relatively consistent. So there we have that. And then you're going to modify the return address, run the exploit, and congratulations, you've got the code execution, but without ASLR on. Now you're going to go in and turn ASLR on. And if you try running it once, you're going to get a seg fault because it's no longer working due to the randomization. So at this point, this script looks a little bit familiar. It looks almost what we're building here, like the one we did in the final walkthrough of the book, and that was the ASLR bypass using exec long, but it's going to be different because we're just going to keep using a static address over and over again and trying and trying and trying. So in this example, it's just having you, if you choose to do so, try to work into the script the ability to see where the stack pointer is pointing at that particular crash. And if you mess around with the inline assembly, you can see how far off you were from guessing the right value depending on the randomization. We've got our shell code in there just like before. And then here, this is where I said it looks similar to that prior walkthrough, but it's different here because we're going to use the static return pointer. See up in this line of code, it says strcat buffer plus 612, and then it gives that static address. That is the same address we're going to use over and over again. So we're not using the address of I or anything like we did in that last example. And then we've got a big NOPS let of 1,000 bytes. And then we're just going to put this in a for loop, and it's going to run, 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 run. And if once we get lucky and the return pointer guess lines up with where the stack was mapped in that particular instance, you get code execution. So there's a little for loop you're going to run. and you run this. In this example, it's 25,000 maximum tries, and it took 1,468 tries to get lucky in this example. And if you do it again and again and again, you'll find that sometimes it hits in the first 1,000, sometimes it takes 10,000 or more. But that's kind of just a quick example of brute forcing ASLR. The second bootcamp exercise you're going to do is MBSE BBS. It's a BBS system for Linux. It was an open source project. It's got one of the binaries is vulnerable to a buffer overflow, and the tarball is available, but this has been pre-installed for you on your Kubuntu Gutsy Gibbon VM. Notice it says here on the slide, installation has been done for you. So don't actually do this installation, but I documented the installation because it has some useful information. Now here's where I would say if you want to try this on your own, stop. And now I'm just going to kind of walk through the slide solution here. So this is the installation process. We don't really need to talk through this one, but if you do want to reinstall it, you can do so. We're just running the setup script. We're configuring it, we're making it, all of that fun stuff. We set the C flags that we want to run. So we're turning off stack smashing protection in this example. Let's see here. Going forward, again, this all has been done for you already. Now, once it's installed and you do an ls in the binary folder, you see all those different binaries in there. Not all of them are binaries, but a lot of them are. The vulnerability is in the mb user add binary within that file or directory. So when you run it by itself, it wants four arguments: a group ID, name, comment, and user's directory. And I guess this is how, with this program, how you would add a user to the BBS system. Now, the interesting thing is there's another place where an argument is being taken in. So if you were to go through and try all four of those arguments to see if any of them are vulnerable to a buffer overflow, you'd find that just isn't the case. I'm going to back up a few slides here. We're looking for an environment variable. So this environment variable there, MBSE_root, that gets taken in. And if you change that environment variable to a very long string, it should cause a buffer overflow. So let's try it out here. If we go forward, MBSE root is the environment variable, like I said, and you can see in the bottom, we're exporting MBSE root to be a string of 1,000 A's. Then we run it, and we get a seg fault when we do 5,000. So maybe 1,000 didn't cause a overflow, but 5,000 does. So imagine when you're going in and you are looking for your data in memory, we're now dealing with a 5,000 byte buffer. So it might take a little more digging to find this stuff. It ends up being a vulnerability in sprintf that's causing the problem. And you could take a closer look at that if you want. So 5,000 A's is causing a seg fault. How do we determine exactly how many? You could try the techniques we've already covered. This is a simple Python fuzzer you can use and should give you some more information that's a bit closer. And just continuing on, we see segmentation fault hit at 4,056 A's. So that may or may not be the right answer. You've got to go and experiment here. So in this case, we continue to run it and no crash occurs, but we change it to 4,082 A's. It crashes, but we don't get control of the instruction pointer. 4,096, we almost get control. 4,097, we get control completely of it. So again, as I've been saying, you're going to have to dig to get this stuff to match up. This is, again, with ASLR off. Feel free to turn ASLR on later if you're feeling frisky and you want to have a bigger challenge. And we're doing all this as root. And once we get the exploit working, we should be able to get out of root, exploit it, and become root. That's going to be your ultimate goal. So this just has you get up the shell code and just continue to work through it. You're going to have to dig again to look around the stack pointer to find out where your data offset is located. And this just shows you the final working script here. So then it continues to logging out of root once you have a working exploit. Switch user to MBSC, who's not a privileged user. And then run the exploit and look who you become. If you're successful, you become root. So this one, since it's not a proof of concept program, it's going to take a lot more work, right? So expect to spend a couple of hours potentially if you don't go through the walkthrough. But if you need the help in the walkthrough, please do check that over. The final challenge here is an optional bonus challenge, but it's a really fun one, so I recommend doing it. You're going to grab the ret-to-libc ASLR binary from your 660.4 folder on the USB. and you're going to copy that over into your Kubuntu Pangolin VM into the home directory. Verify that ASLR is on, and then set the ownership to root and change the set UID bit so it's on. And you're supposed to be completely on your own with this challenge, but there are hints on this second slide here. It's saying run the checksec.sh script, see what kind of exploit mitigations are running. What you should notice is that it's not a PI. ASLR is on, but it's not a position-independent executable. And the system function is in fact being used within the binary. So since the system function has an entry in the PLT, you can return to libc by returning to the system entry inside the procedural linkage table, which will get you to system even with ASLR on. So it's a little trick there. And then you're going to ret to libc, you're going to pass in an argument, like an environment variable or similar, to try to get code execution. Well, ASLR is on the stack. So is there something inside? Is there a string inside the executable itself to where if you pass that address as an argument, will you then get your code execution? And the answer, of course, is yes. We're not going to waste your time. But it's a fun one to try out on your own. So give that one a shot, too, if you do have the time. And that takes us to the end of book 4.